Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, you're tuned to Radio Islam International. The program is called Mind, Body and Chow. In a few seconds time, Ronald gets us going with the workout and health discussion. And then at a quarter to two, inshallah, of keeping up with our anti-racism theme for today, we'll be discussing the bubblegum mentality. Yes, indeed. You know, is it a form? You know, do people feel their gum in India or Indonesia or wherever they hail from is better than others in some way, and thereafter, and therefore, you know, perpetuating this sort of a racism from within? So do give us your input on this subject as we build up to that discussion at a quarter to two. You can SMS 48855, WhatsApp 0727861548, or Twitter at EJAZ_K. But now it's time for the verbal fitness sessions with Ronald Abaji, and he joins us on the line. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Ronald.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, brother. Are you well? Are you good?
Alhamdulillah, I'm doing well. Are you enjoying this rainy weather?
I'm enjoying the rainy weather, but speaking about bubblegum, would you actually like a health fact related to that?
Yes, please.
If you chew, one of the factors of chewing too much bubblegum, yes, it could give you cavities.
Ulcers.
Yes, it could assist in giving you ulcers, but it also increases your risk of flatulence. So
I guess you're right.
Let go of the bubblegum.
Let go. Right. That's good. Good to know. Now we have to know what are we going to be in for today, Ronald,
yeah,
on this rainy day.
So, you know, definitely so. I mean, today I want to focus on the abs. And really, you know what, it's about bringing in an ab workout and strengthening those abs and helping you functionally, you know, alleviate back pain and give you more strength in your abs, but also to help you shape and tone that six-pack that you may be dreaming of.
Absolutely. See what I did there?
I think this weather's getting to you, my brother. But so far, so good.
All right, let's go.
Are you ready for the workout?
I am. I'm sure the listeners are as well.
No, they definitely are. No, what's going to happen is that, you know what, if you can, lay on the floor, on your back, and I'm going to show you some basic things to do. Now, brother, just those that can't lay down,
yeah,
you just take notes of the descriptions I'm going to give,
okay,
because they can always try it when they get home.
All right.
Okay? Now, with the abs, you remember two things. One is you don't want to do them too quickly or do them with incorrect technique. That's why you'll find more time in describing the exercise than actually doing it today,
mm-hmm,
because technique in this instance is important, because you'll hurt your back, hurt your neck, and not work the abs, but rather work your legs. So the first exercise I want you to do is lay on your back and place your hands underneath your buttock for some stability and support. And all that I want you to do is keep your legs out in front of you, straighten them, lift them up 10 centimeters off the floor. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And I want you now to alternate your legs slowly up and down so that as your one heel touches the floor, the other one goes down, that one comes up. So it's nice and slow. And you're reaching that 10 centimeter point. Now you need to make sure that you don't arch your back, but rather keep your back as flat as possible on the firm, hard surface, carpet, or on an exercise mat. And you're doing that for 30 seconds, nice and slow and controlled. You might feel that your legs begin to burn a little bit or fatigue, then you need to consciously focus on your abs. It's a beautiful exercise for those lower abs, linking to our topic of yesterday of losing the post-baby fat.
Mm-hmm.
A wonderful exercise for the sisters out there to do. Now keep going, up and down. Great, now from there, keep your legs together. Now both legs up and down at the same time with your hands underneath your buttock. Go, go, go. Now it gets more difficult because the abs are getting tired. But the abs have a wonderful ability of endurance. That means that they can carry on for a long period of time. Even though you feel a burn now, you're not going to get a maximum workout. So keep going for 30 seconds, both legs up at the same time. Good, now from that position, bend those knees.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and bring those knees into your chest. And as you bring them into your chest, I want you to then slowly elongate the knees out, straighten the legs, feet out, touch the floor with your heels, knees are straight, and slowly bring those knees back into your chest. Slowly push your feet out, straighten the legs, heels touch the floor, and bring it back. This is called a modified leg raise. I call it an ab push, because you're pushing the legs out, but you're engaging the abs consistently. All right?
Yep.
Great. Now, from the way, then that one you do for at least 15 repetitions. Now, the next exercise, Brother Jaz,
mm-hmm,
very easy. Many people struggle with the traditional sit-up. So I'm going to give them an option right now where they're going to bring in similar principles of that exercise, but work it in a very effective way. So if you can, have a partner or someone at home hold your feet down, flat on the floor, and bend your knees. Or you can place your feet underneath a bed or a couch to give you some sort of weight or resistance against your feet. I then want you to sit up. And I want you to sit up so that your chest is almost on your thighs. Place your hands just underneath your chin. Keep your back straight. Look up in front of you and go backwards 1 inch at a time with your upper body. And you keep on going back and back and back 1 inch at a time. And you find that the further you go back, the more the abs begin to pull and shake. This works your core, upper, middle, and lower abs. And when you get to the point where you feel like you're about to drop, you hold it there for at least 10 seconds. Then before you drop, you go up quickly again, back up to your knees. And again, you go back 1 inch, back 1 inch, back 1 inch, back 1 inch. Hold it there for 10 seconds. Engage your core, pull your tummy into your spine. Keep your chin up. And then up you go again. And that you do for another 10 repetitions. And that's how simple this ab workout is. Because you are effectively working the upper, middle, and lower abs, as well as the core. We literally didn't even do one sit-up. We did it on the floor. So you don't need a gym to do abs. You don't need a special environment to do abs. You just need the right knowledge and the right technique and the will to do the exercise.
And as you say always, your body is your gym, Ronald.
Your body is your gym. There's no doubt about that. Because, I mean, what's the use in going to the gym and bench pressing 40 kilos, but you can't even do 10 proper push-ups?
Mm-hmm.
Because your body offers you resistance. You can, you know, work your body out in so many different ways. And it will challenge you and you will get results. I do a lot of functional training at home. I don't have time to go to a gym. So I train at home, utilizing my body in different ways and means. And it does work.
Brilliant stuff, Ronald.
Which means, basically, I don't have a book.
Top stuff. And I'm sure most of the listeners that have been listening from the onset of this program a few months ago, you should be getting closer towards that if you've been joining us daily for these workouts. Now, Ronald, speaking about getting in shape, you know, people all over use scales. Now, what is your bathroom scale trying to tell you?
Your bathroom scale is trying to tell you that when you stand on it, it's giving you a number. And the number is something that scares many people. Mm-hmm. So what your scale is trying to tell you is that this is what the overall mass is of what's on it. That's the reality. So whether you have heavy earrings or whether you've got heavy work boots on or whether you've got a weave in or something, that all adds onto the weight of the scale.
Mm-hmm.
So the scale measures everything without giving you a detailed measurement or analysis of, okay, maybe because you have more muscle, maybe you have less fat. So that is what the scale does. And that weight is weight in its entirety, not muscle, not fat. But new studies, Brother Ijaz,
mm-hmm.
now adding to the evidence that the scale doesn't always tell you the whole story.
Yes.
Especially when it comes to weight, our components of what makes up the weight and additional weight-related health risks. And this is where I think that we are heading towards as a society. We need more insightful information about our body numbers to make more informed decisions about our health.
Brilliant. Now, what is waist-to-hip ratio?
All right. Waist-to-hip ratio is a beautiful measurement. And waist-to-hip ratio essentially is where you measure the narrowest point on your upper torso. That's your waist. And that you can use a tape measure for. And you then compare that in a ratio to around your hip area, which is more or less where you wear, if you're wearing trousers, where that would then go. And you then divide one by the other, and you come up with a number that's either less than one or slightly more than one. And what that indicates is a truncal obesity risk, which means that there's a lot of fat around the midriff region of you or in your upper body, which equates to potentially higher health risks. And those are measurements that a lot of doctors, exercise scientists, and dietitians are now using to identify higher potential risks when it comes to, you know, being overweight. And comparative to other measurements, they're now adding that into the weaponry thereof. It's a simple measurement you can all do. Because as you get fitter and stronger, you'll find your waist will get more lean and trim.
Mm-hmm.
And so will your abs go down. And that measurement will always come down to below the number one. And that means that you are in the healthy range of a waist-to-hip ratio.
Brilliant. And what is BMI, Ronald?
Okay, BMI is not the different version of a BMW. BMI actually stands for Body Mass Index.
Right.
And what Body Mass Index is a measurement whereby we identify one's height and look at your weight and divide the one by the other with other couple of measurements in there or numerical calculations, and it gives you a number. And the number is either below 20, between 20 and 25, 25 plus or 30 plus. Now, what the BMI measurement literally measures is it is a very old school measurement, you know. And for many people, there's lots of evidence that shows that the BMI actually identifies whether you are underweight, normal weight, overweight, or obese. So if you have a BMI of 20 and above, or between 20 and 30, you're overweight. You classify as overweight. 30 plus is obese. And if you have it between 21 and 25, you're in the normal range. Now, this is a great measurement that's been around for a long, long time, many decades. And they've come up with many norms that identify your range and why they do these calculations. However, again, it measures your overall mass and your height. Now, it doesn't tell you that, okay, you weigh a bit more, your BMI is a bit more because of your muscle.
Mm-hmm.
For example, people, you know, I have an athletic build, I my body fat percentage is very low. However, my BMI measurement says that I'm overweight, and that doesn't indicate that Ronald's got a lot of muscle mass on him, not necessarily being overweight. So there's a very big differentiator. So people need to understand exactly what these measurements mean and what they are actually telling you, and what else you need to then measure.
Great. And just a reminder to the listeners to see how easy it is to get your questions answered. Our sister here has just sent in a WhatsApp message. She says, Assalamu alaikum, please ask Ronald the best institute to study fitness trainer and gym instructor in Johannesburg. It must be internationally recognized, please.
You know, I mean, that's a wonderful question. And, you know, there's quite a few reputable companies out there that do it. It all depends on whether the sister wants to go into study at a class environment or do it via correspondence where they support you with audiobooks and online videos. I think those are two things to identify. And if she would like, she could pop me an email, ronald@mypersonaltrainer.co.za, and I can inform her of her options because they do vary. And I'll give her the ones that I would advise, especially on the international recognition, and ones that I always push my network of 200 trainers to make sure that they have qualification on.
Brilliant. Just give that email address one more time, Ronald.
All right. It's ronald@mypersonaltrainer.co.za.
Perfect. I'm sure you got that, sister. Here's a nice question. Is it true that popcorn doesn't make you fit and you can eat as much as you want, Ronald?
I actually spoke about it yesterday. Popcorn is one of the healthiest snacks around. However, like with any health food, from salads to grilled chicken, etc., to nuts to fruits and vegetables, you can't have an oversupply thereof in one sitting because it's also not good for you. So although popcorn is a healthier snack, it is filling. It's how you prepare it. If you use a lot of oil and then add butter onto it, that's not allowed or healthy. And it's not prescriptive to overindulge in salt and spices and masala and everything else that goes with it. So yes, it's a healthy snack, but always there are limits and boundaries that we shouldn't exceed when it comes to even the healthy food.
Brilliant stuff. Jazakallah khair, Ronald. I think we've exhausted our time, but thank you so much. And inshallah, we'll take it up after the school holidays again when Mind, Body and Chow makes a comeback. Inshallah, we thank you so much for your expertise for all of this time. And have a good holiday, inshallah.
And to you too, have a blessed one. And to everyone, be safe on the road. And I wish you all the best, but don't forget, you still have to keep healthy.
Yes.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, Ronald Avijit, he will be missed, as will this show, I'm sure, for the short break that it will be taking for the next 2 weeks or so, inshallah. Should I tell you why? Okay, I'll tell you as well. My family and I, shukr alhamdulillah, we have the opportunity to make umrah, inshallah, and we will be leaving on Sunday. That's the wife, the kids, my in-laws. It's a big crew of us. So make dua, inshallah, that everything goes well. And all of Ronald's exercises have kept me fit. So inshallah, should be okay in terms of all of the different aspects of the Umrah that will have to be fulfilled. But I request duas, inshallah, for a safe journey, safe return. And may Allah make it easy for us and for you as you wait for the program to commence once again, inshallah, in the first week of April, it will do so. Now it's on to the second segment of the program. And yes, keeping with our racism or no to racism campaign for Radio Islam today, we'll be joined shortly by Faiza Munshi, and we'll be talking about the bubble gum mentality. Stay tuned. Yes, indeed. Wait for me to come home when we come back. Inshallah, the show will continue. It will be a new show, a new name, everything. So exciting. Yeah, but also exciting now to discuss this topic. Very, very controversial. The bubble gum mentality, you know. People and their gums. My gum is better than your gum. So we're going to prick that bubble of gums. The bubble gum will be burst today. Joining us on the line, we are joined by Faiza Munshi, who is one of those rare people who is constantly seeking a better way to live life fully and joyfully. She's a veteran in broadcast media with an eye for natural beauty and a keen interest in uplifting women and children in her community. She spends her free time in shock that free time exists. And she joins us on the line now. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Faiza.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Jaz. How are you doing?
Alhamdulillah, I'm doing well. How are you?
So thanks, Alhamdulillah. Just like to tell everyone who's on the roads at the moment to take it easy.
Yes.
So it's wet and slippery and almost flowing like rivers at the moment, eh?
Yeah, I think you can take up the traffic announcer.
I think I need to. Yeah, if you're on the roads today, everyone wants to take up the traffic announcement. So Jaz, you've come up with today's topic.
Yeah, today. Bubblegum mentality. We're going to burst that bubble. Do people feel their gum in India or Indonesia or wherever they hail from is better than others, Faiza?
Yeah, it does. I think it depends how people have grown up, really. I think it's very much an individual thing. I know many people would want me to say, yes, I believe that people, you know, believe that their gum is better than others. I think there's almost two sides to it. And if you've grown up in a household or in an environment that really focuses on that, that looks at this issue of a village that you came from so many years ago, the family came from this village and this is what we look at and this is who we are and this is, you know, this is how we do things or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There is that side of it where people really do concentrate on that, you know, and they find that's important. And even in that sector, I've got two sides to that story as well. And I can never keep things simple, you know how that goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of, there are people who, even in this day and age, feel that it's important to look at where they've come from. Which village they came from and why that's important. Now, when you look at that, that in itself is not a bad thing. In my view, knowing where you come from, knowing where your ancestors come from, knowing where the people, your grandparents, great-parents, grandparents came from, that's not a bad thing. What becomes something that gets the negative connotation with this is taking that and creating a complex around it. And I think we understand what I'm talking about, is that creating this idea in our heads that, okay, because I come from a certain village or a certain gum and I have a certain sort of name attached to, you know, to who I am, that makes me superior to other people. And that, for me, as an individual, is a problem. And like you said, this is a controversial topic. It's something you can't research.
Mm.
It's something that you're not going to go on the internet and say, okay, you know what, I'm going to talk about, you know, how to make myself productive, like this meme talked about, or how, you know, we talked about last week when you're talking about how we can change certain, go back to old-fashioned values and stuff. This is a very subjective topic, in my view. It's something that every individual for themselves has got within themselves, understands, looks at things a certain way. And then you obviously get certain families and certain groups of people who feel they need to keep this connection, they need to keep it so strong. And that in itself, I don't see a problem with it, is that understanding where you come from and stuff, like I said. But making that something that makes you superior over someone else, that is something that we need to look at, especially in this day and age, you know, having to look at yourself as superior to anyone else when there are so many bigger issues in the world. So, you know, living in that bubble, like you said, is something that should no longer exist, because there's just too many bigger issues in the world for us to be worrying about.
Yes, and I'm seeing here some of the comments on Facebook. Sister Fatima very hilariously has said, my gum is lens. And,
for those of us, I mean, Ajaz, I don't know about you, but for those of us who have never visited the village that you come from in India, we, in our minds, can't understand the actual placing of how this has come about. And many people would say that, you know, like, you know, it's actually joked and said, my gum is Lens, for example, or Forsberg. And you wonder sometimes, I mean, if we were in Johannesburg and we looked at Lens, Roshni, Forsberg, Benoni, wherever you are, and you think, okay, would we be able to develop a superiority complex over where we come from? And I don't think that can, I mean, in my mind, that shouldn't be able to exist, because you as an individual need to know who you are. And trying to be proud in a sense of who you are and your culture, that's amazing. I think being able to have some sort of culture in a world that's just going crazy with, you know, doing things their own way, and there's obviously this whole Western culture, so you want to keep some parts of who you are, some parts of what your background is, your but that doesn't mean that makes us any better than somebody else, and that, you know, is an issue that we look at.
And now I'm seeing also another comment from Sister Aisha Mayat Abed. She's saying, I think it's good to know where your forefathers came from, but not to be proud or put others down. Our generation still knows some of the different ones. I haven't taught it to my kids, and I don't intend to. As Fatima Sira said, Lens is also my gum, she said.
You know, and I like what Abed was saying there, is that the issue is not about trying to make yourself superior. That's the whole idea. Is that, and it depends on who you are as an individual and as a human being, and also what we teach our children. And this is not something, it's not just something that we're teaching them about who you are today in terms of a human being. I mean, in terms of these, you know, these issues of gums and villages and all of that. But it's teaching them values and who they are just as an individual and as a human being. So in terms of, if they want to treat someone in their own, okay, you're talking racism today. So we're talking under the race. So if you're a Muslim, you follow the same religion, all of that, but now you come from some other village. So, okay, we're going to treat you differently. Or we are different as people because we come from a different gum. I don't think in this day and age people even have the energy, in my mind, should even have the energy to be teaching their kids that. Because, like I said, there's just so many bigger issues. We need to be able to teach our kids integrity, respect, and all of that. And I want to just, you know, before we'll talk about the gum issue and then also briefly speak about how we talk about the domestic workers issue as well. Because I think those are the two things that really play in our environment quite strongly.
Right. Now, like we were speaking earlier, most people haven't even seen that village that they are so proud of. But I'm sure the people there in that village are simple and community-driven. Right, Faisal?
You know, that's what I think many of us need to understand in terms of who we are, is that what are the people like? If we want to really feel like we are a certain way or come from a certain place, like you're saying, visit the place and find out what those people are really like. Because honestly speaking, I don't think people in that village are thinking, oh, we are from this village and we have a complex and we have a superiority complex. They're just living life.
Yes.
So those of us that have come generations afterwards and are thinking about, you know, what we that place is superior to any other place, it's quite a ridiculous, almost ridiculous concept in my mind. But also, in terms of that, I want to look at the positive thing on it, is that being able to understand a culture or being able to learn from each other. So, for example, if you lived in a certain area, you lived in a certain place, if you lived on the coast in India, for example, and you were known for fish, okay? We won't say why I bring that up. But anyway, you were known for, as you were taught in your household how to do a certain thing, and you did it well. And then your your gam or your village or whatever, the people in that village came to be known as people who did something very well. They cooked fish very well, for example, or they did cooking very well, or they were good at a certain task or a certain a skill. That's something that is a good thing. You teach that, and you teach that to your children. You say, you know what, we can do this well. But that doesn't make us. That just makes you slightly different. And all you can do is that you can then, you can take that as part of, you know, a part of a culture, so to speak. Because if you look at Western society, there's nothing there. Besides taking on the Western culture, which is just, we don't want to even look at that because that's deplorable. You're looking at all the negatives in that area. So we need to take that which is positive from what we've learned from ancestors, grandparents. And it's lovely, you know, for those who have grandparents in their household, it's wonderful to learn the positive products of what their grandparents had brought from India or from, like you're saying, Indonesia, China, whatever place they came from. Because now we live in such a mixed multicultural society. It's not even just about Indian and Gams and all of that anymore.
Hmm.
It's about just seeing yourself as an individual, but also learning those things, you know, being able to say, I know something different. I know to do something slightly different to the next person because that's, you know, something that my grandmother taught me or my granddad taught me or whatever it is. And you bring that into your life and into the life of the children so that they feel like they've got something special, but not superior.
100%. Now, a message coming on WhatsApp says, all the India gums look the same. The smells are a little bit different. Faisal, we don't have a lot of time. We wanted to bring the aspect of domestic helpers and, you know, this bubblegum mentality and how, you know, they're witnessing all of this. And how does that impact as well?
I guess, you know, we're looking at racism and issues of racism. And as we were growing up, and people spoke about it quite a lot, and as we got older and became mothers ourselves, and we also have domestic helpers ourselves, you look at the issue as well. I think just looking at the person who is in your home, my mind always goes towards, people whose domestic helpers actually accept Islam.
Mm.
And to me, that is one of the things that I think we should all emulate. For
yes.
those who have had either domestic help, gardeners, people who work for them, anyone who is in their employment, who actually would take to Islam because of how they treat them, that for me is something that we should all aspire to. So some of the points that people bring up and still to this day say, you know what, don't feed someone something that you wouldn't eat. I, in my mind, wouldn't. I guess as we get older and you see the generations have changed, or for me it's hard to fathom that people would still treat domestic help in this way.
Hmm.
But obviously, if people are writing about it and you're seeing that in the social media, then it is happening in certain circles. So I think some of the things we'd look at is that we need to just treat our domestic helpers as we would treat anyone else that is helping us out. They're doing some of the tasks that we do not want to do because we cannot, firstly, it's too difficult for us to carry those out. Cleaning our homes, looking after our kids, our most precious asset is our children.
Mm-hmm.
And how often do many of us rely on our helpers to either, you know, help assist watch them, to some people have them bath the kids, help to assist looking after their kids. So that's your most precious asset. So the person that's looking after your most precious asset needs to be looked after as well. So I think we need to stop. I don't know that in this day and age people would look at domestic help as being different to them or being inhumane or anything like that. But if that's in people's minds, I think we need to actually step away from that and look and understand that Islam teaches us that we need to treat people fairly. And if you're giving your help for something that you would never eat, if you're not paying them the right wage, if you're not paying them on time, if you're giving them work to do at odd hours of the day and night for ridiculous amounts of time, then that is seen as something that is oppressive. And we know that in Islam, oppression is a sin. So we don't want to be that kind of person. I mean, from the way I see things in generations now is that people have in many ways changed. But I'm just thinking, if I haven't seen it in a long time, but if there's still that mentality of we treat our domestic workers, we will give them whatever scraps we don't want to eat, or, you know, I read recently someone mentioning that, you know, they're meant to live on bread and water and just carry on their work. That is something that for those of us who may be doing those kind of things, we need to just look at it. Understand that these people are human and they're doing all the work that you couldn't possibly manage. So, I mean, we all know, there's funny WhatsApps that go out pre-December about how, you know, things are about to blow up in our homes because, the domestic help is not there. Because it really is difficult. And it's once they're not there, we realize the value that they bring into our lives. And because they bring that value into our lives, I think we need to understand and look after that value as we would any other value that we have in our lives.
Indeed. It's time to prick that bubblegum mentality and see everyone as different trees in the same forest, Faiza. Jazakallah khair for your time. We've run out of time. And Jazakallah khair, it flew by. And thanks for your expertise and for this lively discussion. You have yourself a wonderful day.
You too. Jazakallah. And have a good trip, inshallah.
Ameen. Jazakallah khair.
Assalamu
alaikum. Wa alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes. Faiza Munshi there talking to us about the bubblegum mentality. And it's time to prick the bubble in that bubblegum mentality. And yes, as I said, everyone and see everyone as different trees in the same forest. It's time now to close up the show. Once again, a reminder or a request for the listeners for safe travel, inshallah, for my family and I as we make our way towards the Holy Lands, inshallah, for Umrah. So I'm hoping that everything goes well. I'm just a bit worried about the kids, but inshallah, everything will go according to plan and we'll have an adventure of note, inshallah. And just hoping that all is well with everyone, and make dua for this program to continue, inshallah, when we do return. And thank you so much for your time and for your interactions on the program. I'm going to miss the program, definitely, that's for sure. So from Ijaz Khan and Mohammed Salim, my engineer, for this final installment of Mind, Body and Chow, it's Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.